Welcome to PsychTech on the Geek Therapy Podcast Network. We're a psychology and technology program. My name is Josue Carnona with Kelly Dunlap. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Josue. How's it going?
Before we get into it, gotta thank some Patreon members.
Oh, yes, do it.
The brand new Oscar, Georgie, and Dylan. Thank you for joining Geek Therapy on Patreon.
Yeah, Oscar, Georgie, and Dylan.
Woo woo. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoy your time with us. Now, for more pressing news.
Well, nothing is more pressing than nothing more important than our Patreon members.
Yes. But
just in a pivot, to more like grave topics.
To what everybody else is talking about, because the world at large isn't talking about the Geek Therapy Patreon. They're all talking about this Cambridge Analytica thing. And
Yes. And
I don't know how much you want to go into the actual controversy, because it's really a data privacy issue. But my ideas are to talk more about the psychographics that people are using that word a lot. And I was like, ooh, that sounds like a psych tech episode.
So I think having some background is really important. And I'm probably saying that because I dug deep. I wanted to, like, it's really important to know, like, why this is an issue and to talk, I think to talk about other stuff down the line. And I have this really lovely bulleted sheet in front of me of important timeline stuff that I want to share.
Then take us down the timeline.
So I'm going to do that. Okay. So you have probably all heard of a little company called Facebook, where you can book your face. And in 2013, so 5 years ago, a psychologist out of the University of Cambridge named Alexander Kogan, not Krogan. I thought it was Krogan, got really excited, but no, it's Kogan. There's no R. He developed an app that was called This Is Your Digital Life. And it was basically a personality quiz. So kind of like an informal big five personality assessment type of thing. And over 300,000 people on Facebook allowed that app access to their Facebook accounts because they wanted to test it out. They wanted to take that quiz. You know, we do this all the time. And what kind of like set the trap for later problems is that when you granted the app access to your Facebook information, you were also granting it access to your friends' Facebook information as well. And this, there's nothing nefarious about that other than there was no policy against it. Like that was as Facebook was intended. In 2014, Facebook revoked that, saying that apps can't access other people's data. Like you can grant access to your own, but you can't grant access to your friend's data, which seems like something that's common sense and should have been there from the start. But it wasn't. And then in 2015, The Guardian reported that a company called Cambridge Analytica, who was helping the gentleman Ted Cruz run for president, they were helping him kind of like target his advertising through data leaked from this Is Your Digital Life quiz app thing. So basically this company, Cambridge Analytica, had found leaked information from over 300,000 people and then all of their friends as well, and was helping to tailor the message and the advertising and the targeting to try and help Ted Cruz win the presidential nomination.
Was it leaked or was it sold? I thought it was sold.
Everything I've seen has says leaked, because in 2014, when 2014, it should have just been shut down. Like the app itself wasn't deleted, but it wasn't endorsed either. So I'm not entirely sure, but everything I've read has said leaked. And the difference is that in 2015, after this was discovered, Facebook made the team delete it. Like Facebook reported that once they learned of this leak, so to speak, they deleted the app because it had still just been like chilling on the Facebook server, and they required confirmation from the Ted Cruz campaign that all the data had been erased as well, and apparently got confirmation that was done to their satisfaction. So fast forward to the 2016 presidential election, and it is revealed that this information has been made available through Cambridge Analytica to the Donald Trump presidential campaign. And in total, the data that they were able to give to the campaign was over 50 million users' data, like profile information, their likes, their favorites, their shares, things like that. So this should not have been possible because reportedly this data was all removed at the latest by 2015. But that has not been the case, as Intrepid reporting and some really great investigative journalism has found out. So that brings us to today.
So it's 2018. Many people are familiar with data leaks. There's all sorts of data that leaks from all sorts of information, including email addresses, home addresses, credit card numbers, passwords. This type of stuff happens all the time. If you are online a decent amount of time every day, it's very possible that your information has leaked somehow, some way over the years. What is so different about this one?
Part of it is that the ability to obtain information from people who never even opted in to begin with. You know, the 300,000 people, not that they deserve it because that would be terrible, but, you know, they opted in, they said okay, but, you know, if each person has an average, I think they said something like an average of, you know, 250 friends, and that's how they got to the 50 million number, then, you know, those people who never opted in, who never wanted anything to do with it, have also been pulled in. And in addition, like, this is stuff that was supposed to have been deleted. Like, Facebook said it was gone forever and could never come back. And obviously it did. So there is, you know, kind of a, like, either they're stupid or they're lying. And I'm not sure which one would be worse, because they're both pretty terrible. And then there's also the larger implications of, you know, this isn't about trying to sell you an extra pack of Mary Kay. This isn't trying to get you to buy a new pair of skinny jeans. You know, this is being framed oftentimes as something that influenced the outcome of a democratically based country. You know, I've seen arguments that this could have been what was enough to push the tipping point one way or the other in swing states and result in the election of Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. And there's also, it also raises concerns, not just about data and privacy, but about taking that kind of information and in a way weaponizing it, like, you know, the idea that you can take someone's psychographics, as apparently we're calling it now, kind of the makeup of their personality and their disposition, and predict how people will react, and so you know how to sell to them better, I think is something that is really freaking people out.
The only reason why this is so controversial is because of the elections last year. And I remember arguing with friends of mine who were saying, no, can you believe that they're using this firm and they're using all that data and they're targeting people specifically to give them ads to convince them to vote for Trump and not vote for Hillary? And my argument back then is the same one that's now that I have now, is that how do you know that the Clinton campaign didn't have something very similar? The only reason we know about Cambridge Analytica is mostly because they were bragging about it on the Trump side. And now reports are coming out where they're saying it's highly likely that they never even used any of the data that that we're talking about right now. And also that if they did, there isn't a lot of proof that this stuff works as well as a lot of people were freaking out about during the election. And that's what I think is most interesting, because we're going to find out that way more people, and we already know because Facebook has said so, that lots of other companies have had that same interaction where they had access to a whole bunch of data. Facebook found out, they told them, you need to delete it. And they replied, yeah, okay, we'll delete it. And that was the end of it. No one could confirm. There's no proof that they deleted it. And how could you, like, it's kind of hard to prove. You know, like, oh, yeah, here are my hard drives, or here's the account where I had it all. How do you know there aren't copies? How do you know that hasn't been distributed? A lot of the data that they had came from this one personality test, which adds a very interesting aspect for our conversation. But the way that Facebook works is they monitor your behavior and your interests, and they catalog all of that. And it's very possible that someone who is listening to this program or has listened to anything Geek Therapy related over the past 5 years found out about it, because I used Facebook to target an ad specifically for people with not only certain demographics, but the demographics were very broad. Like, I didn't specify anything other than maybe age, maybe geographic location. But for the most part, it was things that they liked, things that they were into. Like, do you like podcasts? Do you like geek culture? Do you like superheroes? Do you like comic books? Do you like gadgets? Things like that. And that data is just like, that's core to Facebook's business, right? And then the data privacy issue is, well, as long as Facebook has it, right, and nobody else does, then it's okay, which is a whole other issue that I think is bigger and I have more issues with. But then the idea of this psychographics, that you can have this psychological profile on people. Again, like there's a topic of demographics versus psychographics or psychometrics, where you're building out a profile of me would be, you know, a white Hispanic male, you know, lives in the United States, etc. Right? Those are demographics. But then psychographics would be supposedly my digital behavior, right? Coming to light and creating this profile that then could be used to specifically target. And again, this is the contrasts are interesting because in the past people have used targeting for political ads, but it's very broad, right? It's like you're gonna cover this city with a certain radio ad, and you're gonna put banners on this side of town, and you're going to put this ad during this particular TV show because you assume that, you know, voters for this particular candidate will be watching this particular show at a certain time. But with Facebook, it's so granular. You know, it's like this person likes My Little Pony, specifically like one pony. And then you're going to target just people who like that one character, or that one character on a TV show, or a particular color, or have been to a certain place at a certain time. It is like, it is so detailed. And it is scary. And they also have this feature where, and I've used it in the past, where I can take one group of people and tell Facebook, yeah, I want to target a group that's exactly like this group of people, just make it larger. So I could give them a group of 100 people, and then I could ask it, oh yeah, now can you amplify that to like, I want 10,000 people that are just like these 100 people, and then I can target ads at them. And again, this is just like the way that online advertising has been working for years now, thanks in part to companies like Facebook.
So I don't want to normalize this situation because I feel like it's anything but. However, political candidates doing opposition research is not unusual. It's the norm. Companies that are trying to make a profit targeting your data and trying to tailor and customize advertising to you is not unusual. It is definitely the norm. And it's just, in both of these cases, you know, technology is enabling companies and candidates to get better and better and better at identifying people that they are interested in and marketing to them in ways that is more likely to result in the behavior that they want to happen. So this isn't like shocking, anything like that. But one, you know, the fact that it might have influenced an election is a big deal. And another is the concern that, you know, data security people have been screaming about this for like a decade. So it's nothing new. But I think people are starting to maybe take it a little bit more seriously. And I'm really happy about that. I just don't necessarily agree with the way this conversation has been framed a lot of the times. One of the articles I was reading about the guy who was the whistleblower, be forewarned, there's a curse word coming up. So just hold your ears. He referred to what Facebook was doing and what Cambridge Analytica was doing as a mind fuck. And I get from a lot of the content that I've read that people see what happened as some kind of, you know, next gen mind control. And I'm not saying it's impossible that there is no influence, but there's also like the data isn't necessarily there to support that these kinds of interactions can have a huge influence, especially on something as so polarized and emotionally salient as politics. So I did some research this way, and I'm really, really stoked about this. I found an article called The Psychological Targeting as an Effective Approach to Digital Mass Persuasion, and it was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So we're talking like top shelf, legit quality research. And what they did is they pointed out that a lot of the research around the effectiveness of using psychographics has been done with like small samples and using self-report and done in a lab setting. And all of that basically, you know, c- contributes to, well, it works in the lab, but it probably won't work out in the real world. So this is a study that actually kind of took that out into the real world. And they ran three field experiments where they took, they derived people's psychological characteristics from their digital footprints. So, for example, what they liked on Facebook or what they retweeted on Twitter, and they kind of mapped that out and found that it was predictive of psychological characteristics. And in total, they experimented with over 3.5 million people by targeting them with tailored ads based on that psychological profile that they got from their digital footprints. And what they found is that the ads that were that matched a person's level of extroversion or openness, which are two of the big five personality traits and two that seem to be the most in line with predictive validity, they found that people, once the ad matched their psychographic, so to speak, they were 40% more likely to click through and 50% more likely to purchase whatever was being targeted at them. And so it's just an example that it's by no means 100%. It's not mind control. There's not somebody who's like flipping all the switches. There's no magical Oz in the background, so to speak. But that it can have an effect. Now, I understand that, you know, clicking on something is not the same as voting for a president. And buying a pair of pants is certainly not the same as voting for a president. And there's a million other things that go into those kinds of decision makings, too. But it is important for us to understand that what we present online is harvested and can be used to, you know, change our experience or tailor our experience. And I guess my big ask would be, I don't want people to think that this is somehow, mind control or some kind of creepy, psychological, getting into your head kind of thing. It's more of, I mean, a lot of it, unfortunately, I hate to say it, a lot of it's just common sense. Like, if you like the Colbert Report on your Facebook page, I don't need a personality test to get an understanding of where your, you know, some large priorities for you lie.
Actually, that's a great point. I just listened to a podcast recently from Malcolm Gladwell where he talks about satire. And he talks about how tons of people on both sides love the Colbert Report because it confirms everybody's biases. It's incredible. So if you like the Colbert Report, it's actually very hard to know what you like.
Okay, so that's a bad example.
You don't know why you like it. That's a bad example.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Possibly.
That's a potentially bad example.
But it's a great example for this conversation.
Either you are a progressive or you are a conservative who does not understand satire. So, you know, those are two things. Or, you know, like I said, My Little Ponies. Or, I mean, think about the way that Netflix suggests things for you to watch. My son has been watching a lot of, like, educational cartoons. And so now my Netflix feed is just filled with, hey, have you seen this really creepy human animal animation hybrid thing for your child? Or look, here's shapes and numbers. And, you know, it's everywhere and it's all around us. And it's based on what you do. But it's not like someone is like inside your brain telling you, oh, okay, well, you did this, so that makes you, you know, this on that scale and this on that scale. And I just want people to get away from that idea.
I found an article that talked about the University of Cambridge, and it has a very old cover of their website where they were talking about like what they could do. And they have this thing called a prediction API. And the name of the prediction API, according to this article that I found, was called Apply Secret Sauce. Apply Magic Sauce.
Magic Sauce. Okay. I think Secret Sauce is better, but go on.
Yes. But it says, Apply Magic Sauce translates individuals' digital footprints into detailed psychological profiles. Like you just said, it doesn't say transforms people's psychological profiles. it's taking one set of data and converting it into another set of data that might be useful in certain scenarios. Again, the thing that they did is that they used Facebook's data instead of collecting their own data. Because, yeah, okay, they have the personality test a little bit, but it also pulled all this other stuff from people, including Recently, they found that the Facebook app on Android devices was collecting call data. Like, it knew who you were calling, the number of the call, and for how long. And all that stuff was recorded, and people had access to that. Like, that is crazy. You know, that people could have access to all that data. But at the end of the day, like, the idea of psychometrics or psychographics is just, it's a data play, right? You're taking information and translating into other information. I'm thinking a lot about Black Mirror lately because of these conversations.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Yeah, well, one episode that I think about a lot is Nosedive, the one where everybody rates each other. Mm-hmm. And there are these moments in the episode where the girl who's getting married, she talks about, like, no, we can't do that because it doesn't play well, or we can't do this because it doesn't play well. And many times when I watch this administration, I think, like, why did they just do this thing? Like, I feel like they somehow have a group of data scientists in the back. And they're like, okay, well, we ran a prediction API or something like that, something very similar. And it seems like these people that you're targeting, they would respond really well if you said this outlandish thing. Or, you know, it's more effective if you do it by tweet or if you do it over here. It makes the craziness seem informed. Actually, mm-hmm. I just think it's like chaos and more randomness. But there are moments when I think, like, what possible reason could someone have for doing this? And I think that just that idea is that these psychological profiles make people feel like they have a magic sauce. It makes them feel like we can achieve these incredible things. Maybe earlier I said it's not very effective, but maybe it's more accurate to say that it's not that much more effective than other things that have happened in the past. I don't think that the information that we have and the conclusions that we're gathering are that different. It's the targeting. It's really hard for me to ensure that you watch that ad during your favorite TV show. Maybe you recorded it and skipped right over it and never saw the ad, so it's not effective. But with Facebook, it's way more likely for someone to see an ad. And I still think that that's, like, the biggest issue. People will use that data for whatever means they want, and the more money you have behind you, the more you can propagate that message.
You know, I take it back this way. I think magic sauce is more appropriate because secrets are real and magic is not. So, yeah. Like, that's kind of what it feels like is. Yeah, just exactly like what you said. And important to also remember that I think it was the CEO of Cambridge Analytica or somebody who's in charge of that group, he was notated in a couple different articles as having made promises to different organizations, you know, including the Trump campaign, that never happened and were not even possible. Like, making promises about being able to deliver, you know, this magic sauce about who to get and how to get there and what they want and how to get them involved. And, like, none of the data is actually showing that was effective if it happened. And two, a lot of times it never even happened to begin with. So here's somebody who's making these huge claims about the power of this psychological magic sauce. And, you know, I don't even know the magic equivalent, but basically he's someone who needs to be sawed in half and carried off the stage. Because it's not accurate. And I think what you said earlier is that the things that are used to collect information are already super effective, and spending the resources to try and get inside somebody's mind is in that kind of way, you know, through personality tests and, like, in-depth kind of mind navigation is, I mean, to me, it's not financially smart. Like, it's not a good investment because there are other things that can do that for you that are a lot more effective. There was a really great episode of Reply All, which is one of the Gimlet Media podcasts, and somebody had called in and swore up and down that Facebook was listening to her, listening to her phone calls and listening to her just talk, like, in everyday life, because she would mention something and in passing, and then all of a sudden it would pop up in her Facebook feed. And so they did this whole episode on it. And the thing that I really took away from that was, no, Facebook isn't listening to you because it doesn't need to. It already has so much data on your preferences and your behaviors that it doesn't actually need to hear what you say. You know, we're creatures of habit and we tend to be somewhat predictable in that way to begin with. And so they're just kind of tracking that data. And when you have somebody, I mean, like myself, who's been on Facebook for 10 years, 12 years, something like that, there are literally millions, if not billions, of data points that they're pulling from. And I bet that predicts my thoughts and behaviors pretty accurately. Because when you have that much detailed information about a specific individual, and or just, you know, a topic in general, and you've got that much data around it, yeah, it is going to be somewhat predictive. But it is not the, again, forgive the cursing, it is not the mind fuck. You know, I think it conjures these ideas that, oh, they got these super targeted ads and, you know, it made people change their minds and it pushed people over the edge. And that just, I mean, one, that in politics, like, that is so unrealistic to begin with. Ads are incredibly not powerful in terms of changing opinions. They can help solidify existing ones. Like, my grandma swears up and down that Hillary Clinton's emails is like some kind of huge scandal, or you know, like all the conspiracy theories around that gets pushed around the internet either through ads or, you know, of course, lovely 4chan type individuals who are sharing and pushing these kinds of conspiracy theories.
Or your grandma just sending chain letters, basically.
Yeah.
With her friends.
And like, and pushing that kind of misinformation around. So it can do that. Like, it can push those kinds of, you know, those dark, scary ads. But that is not going to, that's not going to convince somebody who is already on the other side of the aisle. Like, in either way, like, it's not going to happen because people's political opinions are so, entrenched already. But what I think it could have done is dig that trench deeper, which is still problematic in that, you know, you're creating a more polarized divide between people because you're feeding into their fears on both sides, although one more than the other, because I hate that both sides crap. But yeah, so just having any kind of digital literacy, I think, is super important in order to, like, kind of take away a lot of the power that these companies seem to think that they have over people.
So Facebook may not be listening, but we actually did an episode a while back where we talked about the fact that there was a setting in the app that did listen while you had the app open so it could hear what you were talking about. And at some point, that was true. And why? Because they're going to try to collect as much data as they can in whatever way they can to sell ads, because that is their business. That is what Facebook does. Mm-hmm. And Cambridge Analytica is just, what we keep seeing is that it's just a really shady company, which probably came up to Trump and was like, yeah, we've got all this cool data, and possibly never even used it and just did the same thing that every other firm was doing, you know, maybe with more money or maybe a little differently, but it's just more data. And, you know, over the years, when we talk about more and more data, like, can you see how long, like, what does it mean to you if you know how long it took me to click something, or if I click something multiple times, does it mean I'm more enthusiastic about it? It's very possible that that's true. And if you have a billion users and you're looking at that data, like, you have a lot of very valuable information. And how they use it is, you know, some people use this stuff for good, some people use it for bad. But the truth is, you've given Facebook so much. I'm sure I've said this one way or another before, but I assume that I have zero privacy, zero whatsoever. I assume that my webcam is looking at me when I don't think it's looking at me. I assume that there are microphones listening to me when I don't want them listening to me. And I don't mean that, like, in a paranoid sense, like, the government is listening to me. I just mean, like, it's probably likely that at some point I did not want someone watching or listening to me, and it was happening. And when you're walking down the street, it's happening. I just moved, and the local the neighborhood watch equivalent here, they were talking about how if anybody puts a camera outside of their homes to protect their property, to please, like, notify, so we can have an entire network of them. So if anything happens, we can all take that data and pull it together to kind of resolve the issue or find who it was or find out what really happened. And so now, like, when I walk out of my house, there's cameras everywhere. And there are cities that have cameras all over the place. Like, it's just something that goes on and on. And we are getting better and better at using all of those data points to predict behavior. I think that's absolutely true. But at the same time, like, what has changed? What's new? What exactly is?
Yeah.
Like, people are freaking out, but it's happening, and it's going to get way, way, way worse.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm hopeful for is that this Cambridge Analytica thing, I hope that not only does it raise the profile of the importance of, you know, having secure data and, you know, being smart about what you put on the internet and that what you share and what you give access to, like, is as much as within your control. But I also do hope that it does push forward policies. Like, you know, in 2014, when Facebook said, oh, by the way, you know, if someone gives you access to their account, you can no longer access someone else's. That to me is such a basic thing that I can't even believe that it would need legislation. But I feel like, you know, there are companies that I'm sure continue to do that and to enforce that. And that would be a really great example of a step that we could take to make ourselves and our digital selves more secure. Because you can at least control what you do, but you can't control what other people do. And so I do hope that some of that moves forward and we, you know, it is taken more seriously as opposed to just, you know, oh, yep, there's those internet data privacy people screaming out the window again about, you know, the coming panopticon and, you know, the end of democracy and whatnot. So, you know, hopefully some good will come out of it. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, people, you know, I am a firm believer, you have free will. You can make your choices. You just have to be aware. You know, if you're on autopilot, then yeah, I'm sure those ads have a lot more, they probably could have a lot more effect if you're not, you know, actively paying attention to what you're taking in and what you're consuming. The same thing is if you're like binge eating and you don't actually pay attention to what you're eating, you're just stuffing your face, which on Thanksgiving is fine, but you don't want to do that every single day of the year. And I guess the most comforting thing is also one of the most discomforting things, at least for when I was, you know, in doing my psychology training, is I had a professor who told me, you know, psychologists, you know, humans are completely, not completely, but humans are unpredictable, and you can never predict what someone is going to do with 100% accuracy 100% of the time. And so I feel like that element of human randomness is what gives me hope. You know, we can't be reduced to an algorithm or a formula. Maybe you can get pretty close, but, you know, there's still spontaneity and variety, and we still are not purely rational beings. And I feel like that is a good thing, and that is something that I'm going to cherish while I still can.
and that is something that has never changed and never will. We'll never be able to target everybody. That's why this is still on the business side, like that's why there are some businesses that do nothing but collect data on you. And there are other companies that do nothing but take that data and translate it into different data that's more useful. And they'll never be able to target anyone with 100% certainty, but the probability that does exist is so valuable. It's so valuable.
Yeah.
But it is not, again, it isn't 100%. No one can. See, I don't think anybody is immune either, right? There's so many different ways, and maybe this is relevant to the digital attention crisis episode that we did, right? Where, yeah, all these things are designed to hook you, and they're, like, the design is good. Like, even the food that you eat, like, there are food scientists out there who are testing food in a certain way so that, like, you come back, you know? Or it's like, you have seconds. So you like it way more than something else, or it pairs well with something else. Like, the entire world around us is designed to hook us. And I really don't think that just like nothing can target you 100%. Nothing is 100% successful 100% of the time. But at the same time, I think nobody is immune 100% of the time. A lot of these things will affect us at one point or another, in one way or another. And you talked about digital literacy, and like I don't think that matters. I don't think it.
Really?
It's, yeah. I like in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's gonna make a difference, because like I'll make a prediction. I bet you that if people were offered, if the majority of people were offered, you know, do you want to give up your privacy to Facebook? Yes or no? most people, especially right now when this conversation is happening, most people will say, no, I want my privacy. But if you offer them a $5 Amazon gift card in exchange for their privacy, I bet most people would take it. I don't think it's as valuable as we. I don't think that most people think about it. I think that's why you can get something like Facebook to a billion users. I think that's how you can get people to essentially live half their lives or have enough behavior represented there to be a decent representation of their beliefs and their behavior outside.
So when I'm thinking digital literacy, I'm thinking more along the lines of being able to suss out what is factual from what is not. So for example, on my Facebook feed, I often get posts from Occupy Democrats, which is they basically are a progressive meme generating machine. And I don't follow them, but either the people in my feed are tweeting them, or because that is the way my politics leans, Facebook is like, oh, well, you would want to see this. But I also know that if I see something and it's tagged Occupy Democrats, I need to take whatever they're saying with a healthy dose of salt. The same way on the other side, if you were to see something from Fox News, you would probably really want to like fact check it, as opposed to something that comes out of, say, the investigative journalism parts of the New York Times or the Washington Post. That's all I meant about digital literacy, is just being being able to be a little bit more critical about what you're consuming. I think that would go a long way.
Oh, I know. But I think that's what I'm saying. What you just described is a lot. Like, yeah, when I see an article, I'm like, oh, damn it. Like, I won't even share it unless I can like reconfirm. I'm like, okay, let me check out. Did the New York Times say something about this? Because I trust the New York Times. Did like, or any big publication. I'm like, okay, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, you know, these are names I know. They're websites that I know. And there are moments when, that's what I aspire to be. Then I'm like, no. I want to make sure that anything I talk about, you know, has seven sources and blah, blah, blah. But then sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, I saw a tweet that someone said this thing that they saw in the news. I have no idea who said it. I didn't see the news. I didn't do anything. And it's still, I got it, right? It was just a flash. It was just a second and it was there. And I possibly even told it to someone else in conversation. And I think that's the majority of experiences.
Jose, you got to leave me my dreams, man. You got to leave me hope. Like, you can't just scoop up all of my hopes in your hands and then like crush them like a soda can. Like, you got to give me something here, dude.
But what I'm saying, like, what I want to get to is that even doesn't matter how, like, I would like to say that I aspire to be what you described. Like, I think my digital literacy is high. Right. I think I practice it. I think I've worked on it. I think I am a discerning person when it comes to information that is coming to me. It's just it's going to happen. Like, and it's going to get harder and harder because there are sites that maybe look like the New York Times, or maybe someone, again, like not even like, you know, but considering fake news, right? You can literally see an article that looks like it's fake news. It's the New York Times with two Y's in the middle somewhere. You know, it's like, wait, what? And you didn't see it? I mean, if you ever seen, like sometimes, I remember for a while, there were a lot of posts where it's like, oh, look at this thing on Twitter. And then when you looked, it was Twitter with two R's.
Did you see there was I think it was at GDC this past week, someone showing off a mocap virtual reality harness kit software thing where it translated the woman's movements and words in real time, but it was just like it was like live action mocap in real time for somebody.
It was
to
just a video.
Like somebody else. Yeah. No, like she looked like somebody else.
Oh,
gave her hair. Oh. It changed her dress. Oh, I'll share with you. I'm sure that's a whole nother episode.
That goes back to our deepfakes thing. Yeah, maybe I trust Al Roker. Does he still do the weather? But now you can have like fake Al Roker telling me that, you know, there's a tornado about to hit New York City, and I'm like, oh, but Al Roker told me, you know, like that's what I mean. Like our digital literacy, like how, oh man, like it's just, I'm sorry for being so doom and gloom.
We got to get good.
I'm so sorry. You gotta dedicate a lot. That may be a new profession that shows up. It's like your filter, like your news filter. Like, mm-hmm. You hire somebody to be your fact checkers and just to make sure that the information that you're getting is good.
It's a new frontier.
See, and that's a thing. See, because so many decisions that we make aren't influenced by a huge bombshell article in the New York Times. They're influenced by like a random tweet that we saw, you know, and then a conversation that happened. Like it is, Again, but none of this is new. None of this is new is my point. That's why I don't think that digital literacy is necessarily going to save us, because the same naivete or how gullible
same-ish
we are.
Same-ish, different day.
Yep. It's been around since forever. And it's going to evolve. All this is going to evolve simultaneously. And that's why, it's a very big data privacy issue. And I think it's interesting that people are using the word psychographics, because there's some psychology involved there, but I think rightly so, it's not that big of a part of the controversy. And I hope it doesn't become that, because again, to hammer home what you said before, this stuff is not a mindfuck. It is not reprogramming you. It is other things in your life will be influential. They always have been and they always will be, but this isn't more influential than anything else.
Yeah. So, I mean, an important issue, and you know, knowing the backstory of it and where it's coming from, I hope will help listeners, you know, navigate what comes, you know, future articles and media and things like that about, you know, the potential for psychology to, you know, destroy the world or whatever. And hopefully it won't go there, but you never know. And yeah. like all things technology related, it can be used for good or for bad. It's just a tool, and hopefully we will learn how to use it in a way that can, you know, convince people to eat healthier as opposed to yell at their, you know, grandma for sharing Fox News.
It's a great point to finish on. People think that Clinton didn't use something like this, or any other politician hasn't been using something very similar. Cambridge Analytica may be shady, but there are lots of other companies who, again, I gave the example, I've paid money to advertise our podcast to reach people who I hope would be interested in our podcast. And nonprofits will do the same thing, you know, like there's different ways to do it. It's a weapon for good and bad. Honestly, because it's a business, like as long as you have the money, you can have access to this data. It doesn't matter.
Once again, Josue just wrapping up
sorry,
podcast with this bright... shining beacon of optimism.
Good people have money too. There you go. See?
I'll take it. I'll take whatever I can get right now.
Ooh. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Psych Tech. I'm really curious what people think about this, because the conversations around this have been interesting, but I haven't heard too much about the, you know, listeners, are you super freaked out, or are you, you know, are you more on like my camp? Like, this is nothing new. What's the big deal?
Well, they just listened to our podcast, so now they are. Now they're like, oh, okay, yeah. Cool. We chill.
I hope so. Did you hashtag delete Facebook? Or, you know, or are you on one of the best parts of Facebook, which is our Geek Therapy Facebook group, which is a lot of fun.
And almost at 400 members.
Yeah.
So you should come. Milestones. You should come join.
Yeah. If you haven't deleted Facebook. If you did, there are many different places where you can find out more about the Geek Therapy Network and our show, including psychtechpodcast.com, where you can find all our old episodes. Anything we mentioned is likely in the show notes for this episode, either on your app of choice or on the website. You can contact us there too. You can contact us on Twitter, which is our favorite place to be. I don't know if I'll ever delete Twitter. Delete Facebook, maybe. On Twitter, we're at PsychTechCast, at Josue Cardona, and at Killian Dunlap. Which, I didn't even touch like how Kelly has two different Twitter profiles.
That's secret. That's my
secret
sauce.
She thinks she's hiding from... It's magic sauce. That's what it is. It's not working.
No, because I actually have two Twitter accounts, so it's secret sauce.
But it's magic.
It's real.
Because you think it's protecting you somehow, but it's just magic. Not good magic. Illusions. Sleight of hand.
I disagree.
Not working.
But that's an argument for another time.
All right, we'll be back in 2 weeks. You just listened to Psych Tech on the Geek Therapy Podcast Network. For more about Geek Therapy and our other podcasts, visit geektherapy.com. And for extra content, including our monthly book club and other perks, consider supporting us for as little as $1 a month at our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/geektherapy.